Hi, hello, and welcome to my show. My name is Adela Wisdom, and I'm running for Congress. I'm running for United States Representative in the 3rd Congressional District of Missouri. So every day I do a radio show, every day I answer a question, and every day I do a live YouTube video about a wide range of topics, from judicial reform, which is our topic today, to infrastructure, to religion, to all sorts of different topics. And this radio show gives you the opportunity to call in and ask us questions at 347-324-5311. So the radio show is the last end of the questions. So this question was given to us on July 15, 2019. And the question is, why does the criminal system need to be reformed? So the criminal justice system has become more expensive and less effective. So these are some of the reasons I'm going to tell you on why it needs to be reformed. Currently, the U.S. spends more than $80 billion annually on state and federal corrections, including judicial, legal, and law enforcement expenditures. That number increases to $260 billion. Hold on 1 second, folks. Give me 1 second. I'll be right back. All right. Sorry about that. I had a slight emergency. One of my dogs, little Rosie, because she needed me. So I had to go take care of her for a minute because I love my animals. Sorry about that. So as I was saying, we have spent $260 billion when we include everything through the whole court system, all of the wheels, including the judges, the defense, the prosecutor, law enforcement. Now, I'm not sure if that number included parole, fines, you know, and all of that, having to go and do a P test and having to check in and pay for your cost of just your weekly or monthly visits. All of that continues and costs millions and billions of dollars. And I don't know if they're considering personal private funds that we pay, the society pays to obtain their own attorney. So the drug war alone has cost over $1 trillion and has resulted in a system of mass incarceration, where now the U.S., who represents only 5% of the world's population, holds 25% of the world's incarcerated in its jails and its prisons. And the capital of Louisiana is the prison capital of the world, meaning you're more likely to get arrested and incarcerated in Louisiana than anywhere else in the world. And then talking about, this is a sensitive subject because racial profiling is very, very much there. And so you're 7 times more likely to be pulled over and arrested in Louisiana as a black man, even though they're only like 3% of the population of the state. There's obviously a disconnect there. And that's why I've always advocated for law enforcement education. We need classes, and we need to make sure that the people that we're putting out there to protect and serve are really, truly out there to protect and serve. We need to be doing alternative things versus carrying a gun. I think they should all have cameras. There's no reason that they can't carry, instead of an actual gun with bullets, the ones with the bean bags or rubber bullets. There's alternatives and there's solutions, what I'm trying to say. And I do believe that we need judicial reform. I'm going to continue on explaining why it's very important that we have judicial reform. Over 2.4 million people are incarcerated in the U.S. 2.4 million people incarcerated in the U.S. roughly, right? 7 million people are under supervision or adult correction systems. One in every 35 adults in the U.S. are on probation or parole, or are incarcerated in our prisons or in jails. So if you sit in a classroom, one of those people in a single classroom are going to go to jail, going to go to prison, they're going to be on parole, or they're going to be on probation. That's an amazing statistic. That's a horrendous number. And I'll say with this, because I mentioned the drug war, Every 36 seconds, someone in the United States of America is arrested for cannabis. Cannabis-only offenses. And then nationwide, we have a 99% plea out. That means only 1% of people in the United States of America who get arrested for any crime, only 1% of those people fight it and take it to a jury trial. And that's really important because the jury trial, the jury is the last leg of our judicial system. And the jury is us, the people who need to be civil servants and go there and vote not guilty for unjust laws. You know, even if they've committed a crime like growing a cannabis plant, you know, and I know that's a bad unjust law, and you're protected by jury immunity when you exercise jury nullification and vote no. You have the right and you have the duty to do so. And if you and more people would go through the jury system and more people would sit on jury duty, we wouldn't have these numbers and we wouldn't have these statistics. If it would take one day for a nationwide not guilty plea and ask for a jury trial, we would stop the system. The judicial system would fall apart. They would not have enough calendar days to schedule everybody in for a jury trial, meaning they would violate your right to a speedy trial, you know, and you're voting and you're saying you're not guilty. There's not going to be enough jurors to go and sit on all of these cases. And so a lot of cases would have to be dismissed, but it would definitely tell the judicial system that we're not joking around. So despite the increased spending on our judicial system, which is definitely increased, like I had told you, it's up to $80 billion annually on a state and federal level. Despite the increased spending, recidivism rates remain high. For those that don't know what recidivism means people that get out are on parole or probation, and if they violate it, they go back in for a parole or probation violation. So 4 out of every 10 adult offenders return to prison within 3 years of release. 4. And 70% of our prisons, the people in our prisons are in there for drug-only offenses. So incarceration is not the solution. Rehabilitation is, right? The current trend towards privatization of the prison only exacerbates the commodification of the incarcerated. The time is now to dismantle, reform, and transform our system. So judicial reform, incarceration versus rehabilitation. Yes, there are some people that need to be incarcerated, throwing away the key and serving a life sentence. We are not going to tolerate people going out and murdering and raping children and kidnapping people and sex trafficking children. Those people, 45 years is not long enough for billionaires that think they can get away with this. Meanwhile, somebody for cannabis only is serving life without the possibility of parole. That person does not deserve to be incarcerated. They need rehabilitation. So I stand for judicial reform. I believe in rehabilitation versus incarceration. It currently costs about $60 a day from taxpayers to keep one person incarcerated, which it goes higher when you deal with women and with elderly and with the sick. Missouri prison system is running at 105% capacity. 70% of all inmates at the Women's Eastern Regional Division Center are incarcerated for drugs only. The opiate epidemic is real, and the solution is not incarceration. The time has come to fix this system. We need to help, especially like women here in Missouri. I'll talk about this briefly. Make the women more productive members of society again. So Missouri's incarceration rates highest for the women in the nation. In the United States of America, we have more women in prison in Missouri than any other state. 70% of women, like I said, at WRDCC are in there for drug offenses. According to the Council of State Governments Justice Center, Missouri's incarceration rate has increased in recent years and is well over the national average. Between 2010 and 2015, Missouri incarceration rate increased by 4% and was the eighth highest in the nation in 2015. The state can invest $189 million to treat offenders in the community for behavioral and health problems, or risk paying $485 million to build a new prison. But like I said, Missouri's prison system is already running at 105% capacity. It is cheaper for us to treat people than it is to incarcerate them. Yet we're only doing this because we are signing contracts. Our state officials and our federal officials, the people we elect into office, are signing contracts with prisons, and we have to keep the beds full, or we pay for it out of our pocket. I know currently the judicial system over here, we pay out of our pockets. They owe us money. The state has not given us our money yet. So this is just a glimpse of some of the issues regarding judicial reform that I'd like to discuss. I do have a lot more on this topic that I think are really important. I have my good friend Dennis on the radio, but I'm going to bring him on in a second because he wants to talk about the creation of the starting of the failure of the judicial system. But there's this saying, there's this little poem thing that I came across a couple of years ago. And I think it really needs to be talked about. And I say it a lot, and I say it in a lot of speeches. And I just think because it's so important that I'm going to go ahead and say it again. So people need to realize that the justice system is non-extinct for the most part, right? It's more apt to be called the just us system because in reality, it's set up to work against the citizens, contrary to what the people have been conditioned to believe. So let's take a look at something called reality. The police officer who writes you a ticket or arrests you works for the state. The attorney that you hire is licensed by the state. The prosecutor who wants to put you in jail or prison works for the state. The judge who oversees the court proceeding works for the state. The jail or prison that you go to and all the employees in there work for the state. The probation and parole office that you get assigned to works for the state. All fines and fees that are assessed to you by the court goes to the state. So you see, the system is set up to benefit the state. If there were very few arrests, it would not be good for the just us system. It would not be good for the pay, the career, the pension, or the retirement of the employees of the state. It is in their best interest to create and work in a police state. The more arresting and jailing of citizens, the more secure their jobs are. Sadly, most people believe that the employees of the state are here to serve and protect or represent us, we the people. The reality of it is they are not. Occasionally, just like the random winner in a casino, a citizen may get real justice in the just us system to help keep the illusion that the system works. But in reality, it is very rare. So I worked with Dennis, who I'm going to bring on, creating an organization called POW 420, where we focused on people who were serving time from life to, 5 years or a year. It didn't matter for nonviolent cannabis only offenses. And we sat through so many court cases and we visited people in prison and we did interviews with people in prison. And the reality is what you think and what you believe is not the way the court system works. Everything you do has to be given to you as a defense. You have to get approved your First Amendment freedom of speech. You have to be approved any of your defenses that you want to use in court. You're the only person in the courtroom that's not getting paid to be there. Everybody else at the end of the day gets to go home. The odds are stacked against you, even though you're supposed to be innocent till proven guilty. If you were really innocent till be proven guilty, you wouldn't be sitting in jail. You wouldn't be in a jumpsuit. You wouldn't be handcuffed. It's all rhetoric to get the jurors to see you as not human, as a criminal. So I'm going to bring Dennis in because I know he's got a doctor's appointment in about 15 minutes. He's got to get out of here. So welcome to the show, Dennis. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for joining us to talk about judicial reform. I know you got a topic you wanted to bring up. We want to share that story and then we can have some conversation before you took off. That'd be awesome.
Sure. A lot of this mandatory minimum sentencing was a result of the 1988 presidential campaign with George Bush Sr. and Willie Dukakis, governor of Massachusetts. The state of Massachusetts had a program where they would let prisoners out on furlough and to go out and be with society and et cetera. What happened is this dude by the name of Willie Horton, who also happens to be black, was out on furlough and committed a couple of crimes. At that point, they used Willie Horton as, we have to have mandatory minimums, we got to have this, we got to have that. Which brings to the fact that we have a lot of laws that are bad laws. Cannabis prohibition was a bad law. And mandatory minimums is a bad law. And there's nothing that irks me more than to see a politician who's finally convicted of something and somehow mandatory minimums don't count for him. But if you're a regular citizen or somebody that doesn't have a lot of money, all of a sudden mandatory minimums come into effect. But that's into this whole philosophy is we have to punish people, that we're not going to try and help them get out of the their problems. Then the other issue is with when you go out on probation, a felon can't get a lot of the services that other people, and if you're a cannabis felon, you can't get anything. And somehow they expect they're going to put you out on the street with no support, no nothing, and expect you're going to survive. I mean, that is wishful thinking at best. Absolutely. So these are the problems that we've run into the judicial system through this reform, where you have one problem, and then before you see a chance that the problem has taken effect and it solves something, you add on. So you add on, and you add on, and you end up with people now that are innocent, that have been languishing in jail for 87 years, or not, but for 8 years, 10 years, 25 years, that are constantly getting out now. You'll see that in the news, that they're beginning to find out people that are convicted of rape never committed it. Evidence disproves what they're being accused of. So
That's why I'm also against the death penalty, because some of the people that we've sentenced to death are pre-DNA. They haven't even updated their case to go through and to see if these people are really innocent. And just because a man is telling you you're guilty, you know, that's one of the things we need to talk about. This is a man or a woman. This is a person telling you that you're guilty of a crime. You mentioned money. You're absolutely right. It seems that if you have money, you could pay a fine and you're never going to do any jail time. And that's absolutely crap, because if you don't have money, see, if you don't even have money, like, here's the deal. If you're released, say your jail time is done, if you don't have an address to go to, they won't take you. You won't be able to get out. You'll actually sit in prison. You have to have an address. And Dennis is right. If you can't get a house or an apartment or a job, you violated parole and you're going back in. Well, like he said, first off, a lot of the services aren't available. A lot of people will not rent to a felon. A lot of people will not give a felon a job. Some states, a felon cannot vote. And the judges need to exercise their ability to sentence with discretion. They act like they have sentencing guidelines, but they're allowed to step out of it, you know, just like Eric Holder did when we saw how many cannabis trials they go. Those are just a memo. Those are just guidelines. Those are not the law. Well, touche, because the judge can sentence with discretion. Another issue is the 101 disparity law. That's changing a little bit as we speak, but that's still very real. There's still people that are in our prison system due to that. 101 disparity is a totally horrible law, and it's a fight against the poor. So, and saying that crack cocaine is worse than cocaine. So if you have a pound of cocaine and you have a gram of crack, you're going to do more time for that gram of crack than you will a pound of cocaine. And everybody knows you take powder cocaine and make crack. And it's, unfortunately, it seems to be cocaine is a rich man's drug and crack is a poor man's drug. So you tell me who's doing more time. You also mentioned punitive approaches, which I think is very important. That's a negative. I have this theory of negativity that I talk about. If you come negative with somebody, you're going to get nothing but a negative result. If you assume everybody who walks into the store with a backpack is a thief, you're putting that out into the environment. And guess what? People are going to steal from you. You have to have a positive approach about people, right? People really normally want to do the right things. Don't get me wrong. There's extremes to everything. There's always going to be a bad apple. Some of these people got in bad situations, got addicted. You don't know. We don't know their story. Take a moment to find out their story. Write to people in prison. Better yet, sit in court support. It'll change your life. It'll change your life. I don't think most people have ever sat in court. You know what I mean, Dennis?
Absolutely. I think that's a duty of a citizen to at least sit through one or two trials as a spectator and see what's going on. Because what the TV version is, or even when you see trials, is completely different than the reality of what's going on when there's nobody there watching the judge and watching the prosecutor and the defense. I've been to hearings where I watched the defense attorney and the prosecutor make a deal, and the guy never saw the judge or talked to him other than he said, "Do you agree to this deal?" And they said, "Yeah." So this is the kind of thing that's the factory or manufacturing process that the legal system has become is actually evolved to where
now,
everybody's going to get a plea bargain, and they expect that to happen, and they expect to make a deal. And I can say one thing right up front: never accept the first deal they offer you,
yes,
no matter what it is.
And you're right with this, because this asset forfeiture is one of the reasons they want you to plead guilty. They want you to be guilty on any of it, because they get to take all of your product, all of your – not product, all of anything in your house. I didn't mean product. Your personal belongings. They could take your home. If you happen to go between your parents' house and your house while you were so-called conspiring to sell drugs, it could take your parents' house too. A lot of people don't understand that. The DEA is 100% funded by asset forfeiture. If you are arrested in a federal case and you are found not guilty, you have to go through a civil trial to get your stuff back. Because it doesn't matter to the feds whether you are guilty or not. They took your stuff, and now you have to sue them. And I guarantee you, buddies, you're not going to get your stuff back. Now, I want to say something, because you talked about never take the first deal. Being aware like that there's such thing as a bench trial, such thing as a jury trial, that you have the right to get a different public defender, which leads me to personal
public
responsibility.
Pretender.
Yeah. Well, what about personal responsibility? Look, we didn't go to law school. We're not judges. I get that. I understand that. But if you don't know your constitutional rights, shame on you. You have the right to remain silent, because everything you say and do will be used against you in court. It's not an if and or but. It will be. You understand, when these guys are asking you questions, it's not because they want to do right by you. They're going to use this in a court of law. Oh God, this guy calls me and he tells me about this case that he's going through. It was a controlled delivery. The post office, somebody called somebody and said there's a package coming to this gentleman, this woman. And he didn't take the package because everything seemed funny. So they left it on the doorstep. All right. And then they raided. They came in raiding him. This is here in Missouri, folks. This just happened last month. And last month. So much for recreational, right? Medical. And inside of the package was marijuana, right? Because the dogs, they had found out. So the sheriff's department asked the highway patrol, asked the post office to work with them to do the package. And here's the deal. In an evidentiary hearing, because that package was in his wife's name and she wasn't present during the raid, in an evidentiary hearing, he can have all of that dismissed. You know, he can, because who called? It was the right to face his accuser. The warrant was supposed to be for the package, and whoever took the package, the hands of where it goes, the possession of the package is not consistent. But he said that he had marijuana in the house. That was it. That evidence I can't help him with. That, and he goes, but I'm a patient. I said, it doesn't matter. Now you have to prove. It's called an affirmative defense. Meaning the burden of proof is switched from the prosecutor to the defense. Now you have to prove that either you complied with the law or it was a medical necessity, et cetera. Had he shut up, let him raid and do whatever they needed to do, he could have then argued later. And I'm going to tell y'all some simple, silly things. If you happen to have cannabis in your house and you do not have your paperwork, write medicine on your grinder. Write medicine or for medicinal use on a sticker on your bong. It's not called a water pipe because you're using it for cannabis. A water pipe is used for tobacco. ETF regulates that. Put that on your bong. Put a little sticker that says medicine on your cannabis baggie or your container. If you happen to use a scale so that you can weigh out your different medicine amounts for the day so that you make sure, you know, you're tri-taking and you want to – what? You got to go.
No.
Oh.
I wanted to point out that no matter what happens, like the particular gentleman you were talking about, is you're the one that loses. Because even if you win, you're going to spend $10,000 to $15,000 on an attorney.
Yeah.
So even if you win your case and you have a totally righteous case, that's a problem. And even with that, you have to pay attention to your defense and remember billable hours. But now I got to run. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I thought it's key. People have to remember that the justice system isn't free.
True.
And if you get a public defender or public pretender, and I don't say that with any
ill will.
Negativity. The problem is the department doesn't get funded. They only get 10 minutes to spend on somebody's case because they're so burdened. And their funding comes out of the prosecution. So like Della pointed out earlier, if this has to do with your paycheck, you're not going to fund the guys that are going to argue with you. You want to get convictions, right?
Yeah.
And convictions doesn't necessarily mean the person's guilty or innocent.
I agree. I agree, Dennis. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it. Have a good doctor's visit. I will talk to you later, and hopefully you'll join me tomorrow's show. All right. Bye, Dennis. Have
okay.
a great day.
Bye. Yep, bye.
Bye. Well, you know, I definitely think these are all things that are worth talking about. I think Congress can, you know, when elected into office, I think it would be very easy to come up with reasonable regulations, you know, removing sentencing guidelines, you know, better yet, removing things like I said, every 36 seconds someone's arrested for cannabis. If we remove that from the Controlled Substance Act, that would lower the amount of arrests that are happening for cannabis only offenses. And then they can concentrate on other things. And we need to have opportunities. We need to invest in rehabilitation and not new prisons. We need to get rid of the privatizations of prisons. And we need to get rid of the monetary incentives for people to charge $15 for a phone call. Because just because somebody is incarcerated, it doesn't mean their family should have to continue to pay that price just because they would like to speak to their loved ones, especially if they're in there because they're an addict. If you want more information, go to my webpage, AdelaWisdom.com. Click on the issues button and see all of these wonderful issues that I'm covering. Like I said, I'm running for Congress. I'm running for United States Representative in the 3rd District of Missouri, which pretty much covers northern Jefferson County and extends north and west past the St. Louis area, covering much of east central Missouri. Specifically, it consists of these counties, Callaway County, Camden, Cole, Franklin, Gastonade, Jefferson, Lincoln, Marys, Miller, Montgomery, Osage, St. Charles, and Warren. Go to my page, learn more about me, follow the radio show, watch the videos, shoot me a question, email me, call me, 573-310-9125, adela.wisdom@gmail.com. And like I said, my webpage is adelawisdom.com. Did I say adela.gmail? Okay, yeah. And then I'm also on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm an open book, and I'm eager and excited to be your representative. I look forward to your support, your vote. Donate to my page. I hope you all have a wonderful day. Remember, stay safe, always remain silent, and never consent to a search. All right. Bye, guys.